paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
On WGN Radio, and that's obviously from the new Adele album, which dropped this week, isn't streaming. And I want to talk a little bit about that to start the show. I'm not a music guy, but how can you not notice this song and think and feel a little bit about it, especially if you've heard it at all? Rob, have you given her some of your hard-earned money yet? Have you bought the single or the CD?
I haven't, and my wife has been making fun of me because I love the songs that I've heard off that the current album.
Why is your wife making fun of you?
Well, you know, I fancy myself as a big, you know, burly guy kind of guy, and I really like this latest effort by Adele.
You know what I find really intoxicating about her? Her eyes. I think she's just got such a beautiful look, you know? And so in the video, yeah. in the video, for that matter, just on the stills that come with it, it would have been the album art back in the day, but the CD cover, I guess. When you see pictures of her face, I just think there's a lot going on there. And so it's very attractive just to gaze into her eyes and know that she's thinking about me when she sings these songs.
Well, that, and then we talked about it before, the main track, Hello, is just so soulful. I mean, it's deep, it's powerful. Her voice is fantastic. It's a great song.
It is. And the thing about her music is, to me, her songs all kind of sound the same. They build and then they soar and there's pain and angst and all of that. And I'm not normally one of those guys. So I'm a little surprised at myself for enjoying this CD and her music as much as I am right now. Maybe I'm just caught up in all of the news about it. Let me just share a couple of stories with you. Wired wrote this week, 2015 has been another dire year for the music industry in terms of high-profile album sales. Only one release thus far. Drake's If You're Reading This, It's Too Late has sold 1 million copies, and it took 6 months to do so. The only other record to go platinum in 2015 is Taylor Swift's 1989, and that came out last year. But there's a new contender in the wings, and if things go right, it could upend everything conventional wisdom has been telling us about the music business. Adele's highly anticipated third album, 25, has a shot at breaking the all-time single-week sales record. Just to be clear, an album from 2015, a year where album sales are in the toilet and the industry is still freaking out about how to make streaming work as a viable business model, could be the fastest-selling record ever. Last year, when Taylor Swift sold 1.3 million albums in her first week, everybody thought, well, that's Taylor. She's special. It's her first pop record. She's reaching a broader audience, said David Bakula. He's a senior vice president for Nielsen Entertainment. But lo and behold, he said, along comes Adele. It's one thing to talk about 1 million in sales, but just to know that people are actually mentioning the sales record is crazy. Wednesday, Billboard cited insiders who relayed that Sony is projecting first-week CD sales of 1.5 million. That could pair with about 1 million in digital sales, 900,000 at Apple. That's where I got mine. iTunes has taken 450,000 digital pre-orders, while Amazon has pre-sold 100,000 physical and digital copies. That puts 25 in the realm of 2.5 million copies, just over the record-setting 2.4 million that NSYNC's No Strings Attached sold back in March of 2000, before the digital music revolution destroyed the foundation of physical sales. 25's first single, Hello, was the first single ever to top 1 million downloads in its first week. The video has been viewed over 400 million times on YouTube. Adele's previous album, 21, sold over 30 million units worldwide in 4 years. 21 has never been out of the top 200. And the singer has steered clear of the usual marketing strategies most current-day artists employ. She protects her vocal cords. She does not perform frequently, and she does not engage with fans on social media. That's from the latest issue of Wired. Forbes just mentioned this. Adele's decision to withhold her new album, 25, from streaming services, at least for the first week it's out, is not the only thing that will have flocks of people heading to stores to grab a copy. There's more at work here than that, and it's much bigger than streaming. 25 isn't just an album. It's so much more than that. It's the rare moment in pop culture that grabs the entire populace and which forces everybody to pay attention. The release is music's equivalent to the series finale of TV's most popular program or the opening weekend for the year's biggest blockbuster movie. Not owning a copy of 25 is to be... This sounds like a commercial. This is what Forbes and Wired are writing. Not owning a copy is to be uninformed and out of the know, and she's ensured that if you want to experience the album, you're going to have to buy it. Yeah, so I gave her, what was it, 14 of my dollars. The song that I am listened to the most, I guess therefore that's my favorite song, goes like this.
I only wanted to have fun, learning to fly, learning to run. I let my heart decide the way when I was young. Deep down, I must have always known that this would be inevitable. To earn my stripes, I'd have to pay and bear my soul.
A million years ago from the new Adele CD 25, so there is that. How about that? The Mincing Rascals is a podcast that we do every Friday here at WGN Plus, at WGNplus.com. And on my Facebook page, I'm King John on Facebook. You can hear a roundtable discussion with Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, and me. This week we talked about two main topics. One was Paris and the fallout all the way to Illinois. And the other one was what happened with that young man who was shot 16 times by a Chicago police officer, Laquan McDonald. Part of the conversation of the Rascals is worth replaying about Laquan McDonald. You'll hear that next here on WGN. October of 2014, a 17-year-old Chicago teenager, you know the story, named Laquan McDonald, was shot 16 times by a Chicago police officer. There's dash cam video that you and I have not yet seen. This week, a Cook County judge has said that the video can be released, however. McDonald had been acting erratically. It looks like he had angel dust in his system. He was brandishing a small knife. We talked about this in our weekly podcast called The Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams, and I'm joined on Fridays with WGN Radio Steve Bertrand, the Chicago Tribune columnist and editorial writer Kristen McQuarrie, and Eric Zorn. The first voice you hear on this partial playback is Eric Zorn's.
Well, I think the video should be released. It is going to be released by Thanksgiving, probably Wednesday. The big question I have is, what took them so long to do the rudimentary investigation of this case and to come to some conclusion about what should happen to the police officer who is still employed by the police department, is on desk duty?
Right, right.
If to the extent that the release of this video is going to hasten the administration of justice in this case, I'm all for it.
Is it in federal hands, though? I mean, was it not a federal grand jury or no?
I believe it's a federal grand jury.
Federal grand jury,
yes.
Yeah. In fact, really, they're still convening. He hasn't had a day in court yet, right? They haven't had a trial for this officer.
Oh, no,
yet.
No. The city settled. The city paid $5 million to the family. They took one look at this video and opened up their wallet.
But they didn't fire the officer.
Yeah,
they didn't fire the officer, and this is a case that actually started from a citizen journalist just trying to get a copy, a FOIA copy, through the Freedom of Information Act of the dash cam.
But they said they didn't want to release the video until the investigation was complete. Right.
Okay,
that's,
fine,
that is,
what
that's
takes
what they've
them
been
so
saying,
long?
Yes.
It's like Fox Lake. How hard is this? Really? Come on, people.
I think they were just hoping it would go away.
I think that's right.
That the steam would, you know, run out. This is going to be a very volatile video that's going to put Chicago on a global front, along with all the other police shooting videos. People say it's almost more horrific than some of the other ones you've seen.
What we've heard, none of us have seen it, obviously, but that it's just worse. It's one of the worst.
It's an execution, it sounds like.
Yes, that this guy was.
Which is why we'll see it Wednesday afternoon, right? The day before Thanksgiving,
probably.
At about 4:45.
Well, you know, if they can do something to minimize the impact, I don't know that that's a bad thing, because the full impact could just be, who knows, what sort of violence. People might riot. I mean, there'll be rallies, and those can get out of hand.
I think it also will show the police lie. I mean, they, during the lead up to this, they just kept saying that this boy lunged at the police officer. That's what they kept saying. And people have said the video shows exactly the opposite.
Fearing for his life, the officer then has to retaliate. And the video, evidently, Kristen, doesn't show that.
Correct. That's what we've read. That's what we're hearing.
Well, particularly since what we hear is that the description of the cops, all the rest of them in this case, seem to be doing exactly what we want the police to do. Guys acting erratically. A couple of officers call for backups. Can we get a taser here? They're following him then in their squad car and sort of hurting him as he goes so that he doesn't do any harm to anybody. But they didn't shoot him. They didn't tackle him and wrestle him. It seemed to be acted so cautiously. And then this guy arrives, this officer, and then opens fire on him is the description we're reading.
I would like to know also what the other officers then said in their reports, if their reports reflected what actually happened or if they reflected this phony version of events that we were fed.
Well, it's a case of where the union protects the cops, and sometimes you want the prosecution or the police to just go, hey, this is a bad one, that's a bad officer, or he behaved so badly, he's now going to lose his job. And stop circling the wagons around these guys.
He may lose more than his job. He may face murder charges. And this, and again, we haven't seen the video, but all the descriptions of it that we have heard indicate that it's going to be really bad.
Yeah.
And his family doesn't want it released.
That's interesting too. Yeah. I mean, they want justice. Well, they've got a civil version of justice, but you can't turn back the clock. So what are you going to do? You know, we have a somewhat similar case going on in Minneapolis right now, in the 4th Precinct on the north side of Minneapolis, think south side or west side of Chicago. A young man was killed, maybe execution style. There's a great debate about what exactly happened, but a single shot to the head. He may or may not have been handcuffed. The police say he wasn't. There's no dash cam video, but there's a huge disagreement about, you know, what happened there. And the police do have some video, and they won't release the video. So now there's a tent city living around the police headquarters, and people are demanding that the video be released. We want to see the video. The police say they don't want to, pending the investigation, because they're afraid that if they tell people what's on the video, then the witnesses will alter their story to match the video, and they can embellish it any way they
want. Well, that's fair enough. But when did this incident happen again, John?
A couple weeks ago.
Well, I mean, I would give them a couple of weeks. This incident in Chicago happened more than a year ago, right? I mean,
it was 2014.
So, I mean, I would side with the police maybe in Minneapolis, give them some time to do the interviews, conduct the investigation. But come on.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no other side to this story. I think we're all frustrated. What is the mayor's position on this, too? He sort of not wanted the video released either, and now he seems to have flip-flopped a little, right?
Well, I mean, the city signed off on the settlement, so I think he agreed that there was, you know, going to be no easy way out. But the city could have this judge's ruling and decided not to. So I think he's kind of ready to take whatever the consequences may be. The city could have appealed this and delayed it even longer.
It's a matter of you're going to have to take the castor oil, you get it over with, or put it off further.
But do you blame the police or the city for not wanting the video to get out just because of what's going to happen when it does? Well, I mean, that's not going to be good either.
If I can make Eric's case, though, that would be a more plausible fight if there had been swift or at least action against this police officer. And so if you have the stonewalling on the video and any delayed prosecution or decision on the police officer, you know, those two things just don't go together. You can't have both.
I don't think these advocates for justice are saying that they believe that it's possible that no innocent people will be shot. Or I'm not saying this guy's innocent, but that the police won't wrongfully shoot people. That's going to happen. What they want is justice when it happens. And so why you had all the protests in Ferguson, those stemmed not just from the shooting of Michael Brown, they stemmed from the outrage that the citizens had there, rightly or wrongly, over the fact that they didn't charge him. And I think that's where you get this outrage. So my guess is, and I think John Cass said this morning, is that these charges are going to come pretty quickly now, probably before the release of this video, so that there's not this sense of justice hasn't been done.
Right.
It'll be just like, this is horrible, but justice is being done. This guy's been indicted. And that's, I mean, you know, again, we haven't seen this, but that's kind of what I hope for. I hope that this isn't released, and then they say, well, we're not going to charge him, because that would really create a tinderbox.
Eric Zorin from the Chicago Tribune. You can read him online. Kristen McQuarrie, too, one of the columnists and editorial writers over there, and our own Steve Bertrand. The podcast of that in its entirety can be heard at WGNplus.com. It's called The Mincing Rascals. You can check it out on my Facebook page, too, if that's easier for you. I'm on Facebook, King John. And you can also download the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or however you listen to your podcasts. It's out there. It's called The Mincing Rascals. It's the only one called that. It's 2:20, almost 9 on WGN Radio. I will pause here, update you on WGN Radio News, then talk a little bit more about politics, which the Mincing Rascals did too. I'll let you hear that conversation when you listen to the podcast, but I want to open up the phones to you in a minute on WGN. You have to shovel much out this morning? How was that for you today?
Pretty good. The pavement was still warm, so most of it melted, a little slushy, but you know, I didn't need to break out the heavy artillery.
Boy, some of those numbers, though, a foot in Woodstock, 8.7 in, where was that, Barrington, Buffalo Grove got 7.5, Hebron got 9.5 inches.
Yeah, west and northwest, north of the city, you're getting hammered.
Man, okay, well, hang in there. Welcome to winter, huh?
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine wrote a book, Rob. It's called Presidential Swing States. Presidential Swing States. He's a political scientist named Dave Schultz. I might put him on the show one of these weekends when we have a little more time. But he said that for all that we worry about presidential politics for a year and these national polls and who's trending up and down, he said in 40 of the states, what you think doesn't matter because there's so many other people in your state and their votes are already taken for granted. So if you live in Illinois, you know, the Democrat will get the vote. If you live in Texas, the Republican will get the vote. And in only 10 states is it really worth engaging in the electorate and actually spending money in ads or hitting the campaign trail and going to those states. Only 10 states really are in play for who will be the next president of the United States. He says in only 4 instances, this is in his introduction, I just think it's an interesting number I want to get to, it's just a paragraph, but he said 4 times before has the popular vote not reflected the ultimate vote, you know, the electoral vote. Previously, the first was the 4th presidential election in American history where the winner of the popular vote did not win the election, and that was John Quincy Adams. In 1824, Andrew Jackson was the popular vote winner. In 1876, Bill Tilden won the popular vote but lost to Rutherford Hayes. In 1888, Grover Cleveland won the popular vote but lost the Electoral College to Benjamin Harrison. Harrison became president. He didn't get the most votes. But obviously, that most recently and famously happened in the Gore-Bush race. And here's what he says about that. He says, the Florida 2000 controversy culminated in the Supreme Court's Bush versus Florida decision that invalidated the recount procedures in 4 counties on equal protection grounds and, more importantly, declared a controversial halt to any recounts, effectively then declaring George Bush the winner of the state's popular vote by, do you remember how many votes? This is the number. If you remember what Babe Ruth's home run record was, or, I don't know, pick a number that's in the popular culture, we should remember this number. What was the difference in Florida? It was 327 votes.
Wow.
So they gave Bush the popular vote, even though ultimately Gore got more votes in America than Bush did. The way the Supreme Court intervened, the way they stopped one recount and invalidated other votes, etc., it came down to 327 votes in Florida, which gave him the 271 electoral votes to win the presidency. So 327 is a number that civics teachers should impress upon kids. I don't know what the moral of that story is, like your vote counts or something like that, but the point of the book anyway, called Presidential Swing States, is that really what we've done now is drive it all down to 10 states, and those are the people that are the deciders.
I'll have to get that book.
Yeah, you know what, my friend? I will make a copy come to you in the mail.
I think what's interesting about that Bush-Gore race is that although Gore, as you just said, got more of the popular vote, couldn't carry Tennessee, which was where he was from, and couldn't carry his president's home state of Arkansas.
So I guess if he had done that, then he would have been fine anyway.
Probably.
Well, you go back and look at all the mistakes Gore made, like not bringing Clinton in to help him more along the way.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of people hate Clinton and will never vote for him or anybody like him, but a lot of people are charmed by Bill Clinton. He's an effective campaigner, but he felt he was tainted and he didn't want his help, so maybe that was a mistake that history will teach, too.
Well, even his own wife has kept him at a bit of a distance up until now.
Hillary has, you mean? Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I've been thinking a lot about the presidential campaign this week. In our Mincing Rascals bit, Eric Zorn once again predicted that this week will be the fall of Donald Trump. He does that every week, and it hasn't happened. And I don't know when it will. You know, Trump now wants a sort of tracking plan for, if not Muslims, then Syrians. Or Muslim Syrians, and it's got people rolling their eyes saying, oh my God, this is terrible, the rhetoric or the image is awful. It doesn't seem to hurt him. After Paris, I think a number of interesting things have happened, and I have to tell you this too, Rob. I am planning, I'm supposed to lead a WGN tour to Paris in April. When this first happened, of course, we thought instantly of the tragedy. But a short time later, I started to think, well, how does this affect me? And here's the arc of my thought process over the first 48 hours of last weekend. We didn't talk last week, so I'll just tell you what my week or weekend was like. And that was, at first I thought, oh my God, that's so terrible for those people. And I thought, I don't want to go to Paris. I mean, are you kidding me? We have to cancel the trip. And then maybe 12, 24 hours later, I thought, well, all right, I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be fine by then. Somebody else, a travel expert, told me it's the safest city in the world now, that sort of thing. So after about 24 hours, I thought, well, all right, I'll go. But I'm not sure if anybody else is going to go with us. And then about 24 hours after that, I thought, by God, we're going.
Yeah.
You know, you almost felt it was sort of a cause, and I don't have a cause about going to Paris, but it seemed a little like, let's not let them keep us from doing what we want to do.
Well, isn't that interesting, though? The diabolical brilliance of ISIS and Al-Qaeda is to hit us where it hurts most, at our openness and our ability to move about without restrictions. So as a Western society, that puts us on our heels for a while. But if you look after, for instance, 9/11, we eventually got back to a point where we were, again, moving about freely and enjoyed all of the trappings of Western society. Yeah. So I would suspect that at some point in time, and probably by your trip next year, it should be back to that. What concerns me is this see something, say something thing that we're on now. So does that mean a brown paper bag in the middle of a lunchroom is going to shut down five city blocks for half a day? Those types of things, I think, are what concern me.
And there's an article on CNN today saying that Muslims feel more repressed now than they have since or even including 9/11 in the United States. I mean, really, when you think about the rhetoric that Donald Trump is trotting out there, that we ought to have some sort of tracking program of Muslims that live here, or that we ought not to let any more refugees out of Syria into the United States. Not that we've been letting a lot in anyway. It does give you pause. I understand why the governors all around the country are saying, hey, hold on, no more refugees. We've got to stop the floodgates. Well, first of all, the floodgates haven't been opened. And number two, the profile of the refugees isn't the same as a terrorist. It's just not. Only one of the gunmen in Paris was a Syrian refugee, for instance. And I know one is too many, but I do get caught up a little bit in the image of America to ourselves and to the world. And I don't like the idea that we're saying, oh my God, something bad happened, and so now don't bring us, you're tired and restless and weak. I mean, it's really the Statue of Liberty turning its back on the rest of the world, and in fact, on some of our own citizens. And I know that sounds just like rhetoric, but I find myself, incidentally, feeling very comfortable and safe living in the Midwest, feeling that, saying, you know what, I don't like this image of us looking over our shoulder at our fellow citizens, or maybe the weakest among us who really need the United States, and looking at them with suspicion. Easy to say that, maybe, again, living safely in the Midwest, but that's my attitude about it. Let me bounce this off you. You got a second, Rob?
Sure.
So we haven't been promoting the Paris trip at all, for obvious reasons. It looks tacky. But if we go back to it, this is a proposed piece of copy that I could read. And it goes like this. John Williams here. Earlier this fall, I invited you to join me on a trip to Paris in April. We talked about the majesty of the City of Light, and then it happened, and it shook us all. Many of you have asked if we're still going, and I'm here to tell you that we are. If you'd like to join us, the information is at WGNradio.com, but this isn't so much about that. This is just to say that Paris is still beautiful, the Eiffel Tower still magnificent, the Louvre still priceless, and we intend to savor it. So that's one way to position the message now. I don't know what an advertising expert would say about that. Maybe they'd say, no, don't even go there. But it's kind of the elephant in the room. So, you know, how exactly do you open your arms to people that still want to do something
I'm not sure what a focus group would say about it. I know what my gut is telling me just upon hearing that for the first time.
Yeah.
I think it strikes a very nice balance.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
I asked Thomas Jefferson a little bit about how our founding fathers handled terrorism, because as it turns out, they did. And it was an interesting conversation that he and I had. That podcast is at WGNplus.com and on my Facebook page, too.
Have you, John, ever read a book? I'm about halfway through it. It's called Power, Faith, and Fantasy, written by Michael Oren.
No.
Very, very good. From the time of the Revolution to basically now, it chronicles the Western world, but more specifically, the United States' relationship with the Middle East and how tumultuous it has always been, and how we continue to kind of repeat the same sorts of things that we have for almost 300 years now.
Oh, man, I'd love to read that, because that's the frustration. Listen, a congressman not too far from where I live has proposed to the United States Congress that we declare war on ISIS, not just give the president powers or send more drone strikes or participate in some sort of international coalition, but that the United States, as we did before World War II, declare war on ISIL. And I'm not sure I want to go there. I'm not sure that I want to send our sons and daughters over there. In fact, I know how I feel about that. And I wonder what you are thinking when you listen to this conversation. I have to pause here. If we got a minute for a call or two, we'll take your thoughts on it. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. 252, make it 3 now on, or almost that, on WGN. I'm just watching the clock. By the way, it's not 2, it's 1:53. I'm just counting down because we're getting ready for pregame coverage of Northwestern football. They're taking on the Badgers in Wisconsin. If you are on the road, probably driving through some yuck, good luck to you on that. They're playing at Camp Randall, and we'll broadcast that game here on WGN Radio. Listen at 2. Placing a loved one in a nursing home is one of life's most difficult decisions. You deserve only the best care for your loved one in return. Sadly, nursing home negligence is real. It's a serious problem. Neglect and abuse of the elderly happen every day. And the law firm of Conasec & Dillon wants you to know that nursing home negligence can cause serious life-threatening medical conditions like dehydration, malnutrition, fractures, infection, even death. If you suspect a loved one is a victim of negligence or abuse in a nursing home, call Conasec & Dillon. Law firm of Conasec & Dillon will advise and help your family through the painful ordeal of injuries or death caused by nursing home negligence. Conasec & Dillon understands that entrusting a loved one to a nursing home is one of life's most difficult decisions. Protect your loved ones. Call Conasec & Dillon at 630-262-9655. Consultations are always free. Conasec & Dillon at 630-262-9655. It's maybe just a couple of minutes here for a couple of phone calls. I know everybody agrees with everything I've said so far, so let's just go ahead and pick up a couple. Let's go ahead and pick up a couple of phone lines. We'll start with Phil, I think, on line one. Hey, Phil, this is John. You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you doing? I was just relating to your manager that there's an episode of Star Trek. I mean, regardless of whether you're a Trekkie or not, but it's called The Enemy Within, and it's a case where Captain Kirk is split into two of personalities, the very same person, and yet he's been split into both good and evil. And in essence, Gene Roddenberry was foresightful in understanding that both good and evil exist within all of us. We can rail all we want against either some type of ethnic group and our religion, But then how do we explain the Timothy McVeighs of the world who commit terrorist acts here in the United States? So to target certain individuals and our groups because of their religion or, again, their ethnicity is so unreal because, again, it exists within all of us. But the other point he made was that one cannot do without the other, that the nature of our being in essence requires us to have both of those elements within our personality.
Well, I hadn't thought of, you know, I thought I'd heard every analogy and thought on this, Phil. Thanks for the phone call. I hadn't thought of the Star Trek angle. I appreciate you jumping in here. The idea that there would be a religious test in the United States should scare you, if you ask me. Maybe one more quick phone call. Rich, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, you know, I have a nephew that joined the Army some years ago, and he felt that he could do some good. And he decided that he was going to go join, and he did, and he's still in the active Army. And, you know, we have a lot of troops that will do what the politicians, the gutless politicians, won't do. We have people that will fight for our country. You see it every day on TV. We have a lot of wounded, seriously wounded troops. But they did their duty, and they'll do it again.
Oh, I understand that.
What and they believe in and what we believe in.
I understand that, but did you catch what the president said when he was addressing the international press at the G8 summit? I think that's what it was. He said, it gives you pause to send our troops into harm's way when you visit Walter Reed Hospital, as I do often, and you see the injuries they come home with. We can get angry. We can, you know, strut our stuff and say, by God, we're going to go to war with them. We're going to fight them. He said, go visit the kids in the hospital afterwards and see if that doesn't restrain your bravado just a little bit. I'm out of time. We got to give me a longer show. Northwestern football's right around the corner. This is WGN. Thanks for running the dials, Krista. Griffin, thanks for producing. You can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com. I'm King John there. We have lots of conversations, videos, and things for you to comment on there, including the Mincing Rascals podcast and our Thomas Jefferson post, which this week includes him starting to tell a joke. You'll enjoy that. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. Time for Northwestern football on GN Radio.